I'm your host, Gail Seiler, and we've been joined now in the studio by Alex Fafar from the Ames Historical Society. Good to see you today.
Thank you for having me.
It's the 50th anniversary of C.Y. Stevens, so we're going to be talking about that. But I think first you're going to give us some history kind of on that whole area and how C.Y. Stevens even came to be.
Yeah, I thought we'd talk a little bit about the history of the Iowa State Center, just that area in general, because I think, obviously that's an area that has some large buildings in it. It's kind of wide open. And if anybody that's lived here in 1993 or 2010 kind of, I think, knows why that's been wide open, was wide open for so many years. It's in a big floodplain here in town. So people shied away from developing on it for a long time. But an interesting fact about that, when it was a wide open field, maybe some of you are familiar with Nita Snook, who was a female pilot in the Ames area in 1920s, and she actually went on to later teach Amelia Earhart to fly. But before she did that, she was barnstorming in the Story County area, and she used the floodplain there as her airport. You know, we got to remember there was no official Ames airport back until 1945. So kind of a little fun prehistory of that area. But I think the interesting thing with the Iowa State Center developing in there is it's also the same time as the Highway 30 bypass was getting developed too. So prior to that, Lincoln Way was the main highway through town, which really got congested. And so in the late 50s, they're working on projects to bypass towns, get four lanes for everybody going every direction. And so there's some fun. If you look at some of the maps of the city of Ames from back in the mid-60s, while they're trying to put out city maps that students can use to get their way around town, they're putting some of these proposals for the projects on there. So if you look really close at a few of those, you'll see, like, instead of having what we know as University Drive today is the main road up that, the main exit,
like
there,
perpendicular to Lincoln Way.
Yeah, running north off the highway there. There were proposals to connect it to South Riverside Drive on the other side of Squaw Creek, which would be kind of interesting. I live over not far from that neighborhood, and I couldn't imagine if the main road was going through there. So it's kind of fun to look at some of those maps and see, like, what was happening at the time and what eventually came to be, you know, when they built this thing and eventually decided to go kind of a little more towards beach, but not totally link up with beach and get Elwood Drive, which I'm sure you still remember Elwood Drive being in town, Gail?
No. I only moved here 5 years ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I moved to town in 2007, and I got to enjoy Elwood Drive for about a year and a half, I think, before it got renamed.
So explain what that was.
So that was University Drive. Okay. In 2000, that was its original name was Elwood Drive after Philip Elwood, who was a landscape architecture professor for, I think, 27 years on campus. And so they named that road in his honor, like many roads in that area are named after Iowa State professors. But the university, with its 150th campaign, when 2008, when they turned 150, they wanted to kind of make the street be more reflective of the entrance to Iowa State College that it is today. Okay. So they put up those big brick signs kind of near Ryman Gardens and rebranded the road as University Drive from Elwood.
Professor Elwood kind of got demoted. He got the road taken away.
He did. I think he still has a dormitory level named after him. I think I've seen that on a building. So I don't think he's without anything named after him. But
so they decided to build on that floodplain regardless of the fact that it was a floodplain.
Yeah, exactly. And build this huge, big complex that we now have five buildings on. And here, I'll throw another little quiz question at you. Of the buildings all in the Iowa State Center, do you know which one, excluding Jack Trice Stadium, which one is not named after a major donor? Any guesses?
No.
It is Hilton Coliseum is actually was named in honor of James Hilton, the former president of Iowa State, because this was actually the whole center idea was his brainchild.
So he's not a donor.
He was not a donor, but it was named in his honor because of it was his idea, or he was really pushing it forward.
Hilton.
So he proposed this idea in 1954. And in 1958, ISU Foundation was formed with the primary goal of raising funds for the construction of the Iowa State Center. And it's working on raising over $800 million in donations. Now, there was no funds. The state did not appropriate any funds for the construction. And this is a fun fact that I like too. The first donation to the project was $2 anonymously from a person. Then followed by a second donation of $1 million by C.Y. Stevens, which I'm sure you're familiar with at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium. And I think some people, if you're not from town or haven't lived here for a while, the CY does not stand for the mascot either. Like some people think it might. It was Clifford Y. Stevens.
So it's just coincidence.
Just a coincidence. And it's hard to leave it off the building if that. You got to use his middle initial if it's CY, right? So the building is not named after the Cardinal, but a former ISU alumnus that contributed to it. So yeah, we're going to hopefully, you're going to find out a lot more about the Stevens, CY Stevens building when we have our lecture next Wednesday, April 24th at 7 p.m. at the Ames Public Library. And this is going to be all about talking about 50 years of Stevens Auditorium. So it's going to be presented by Tammy Kolbeck, Executive Director of the Iowa State Center. And I think she's going to do a wonderful job talking about some of the, you know, well-known stories. Obviously, some people, if you're living in town, you know some of the people who are coming through and doing concerts like Elvis and Whitney Houston and people like that. But maybe some of the behind-the-scenes stories that you've never heard before that you'll want to tune into. There's a great quote from an Iowan who entered CY Stevens Auditorium for the first time to hear the New York Philharmonic was the opener. And he's quoted to say, "It's a hell of a hall for a cow college."
Classic Iowa response.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so 1969, CY Stevens opened, and we've been enjoying great, you know, orchestras, performances for 50 years here in town. I'm curious, Gail, do you have you ever seen a show at CY Stevens or have a favorite?
I've only seen student performances there.
Yeah. Like of what variety?
Concerts.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, like I think I often go to choral concerts, and I think some of them have been there.
Ah, nice.
I haven't really gone to any of the big Broadway shows that come through or anything like
that. Yeah,
well,
sorry. The closest thing I think I've been to, well, I think it was on Broadway, but I went and saw Young Frankenstein there a couple years ago. Big fan of the Mel Brooks movie, so that was really good and wonderfully done. I've seen a few other shows, like Bob Dylan came to town last 2 years ago, I believe, two mm-hmm. Octobers ago.
Right.
That was a great show.
I remember hearing about that.
I
didn't go to that.
I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan, so that was not my first show, hopefully not my last
either.
So
you went to that?
I did go to that one. That was a great show. So it's a wonderful auditorium just being in that. And I even used to work at the Sheeman Building as an Iowa State student, doing event setup and stuff and stuff like that. And one of my jobs was we had to roll over our dirty work shirts over to CY Stevens because I guess they had the only washing machine in the complex. And we'd have to roll them across the stage. So every once in a while, I get to take a little 5 or 10 minute break in the orchestra pit, just sitting down there in an empty Stevens auditorium, which is kind of fun.
So what are the five buildings?
Yeah, I mean, we should mention that. Yeah. So I guess we'll start with the biggest, Jack Trice Stadium, and that was completed in 1975, and that cost over $7 million to build and can seat over 61,000 in there. So, and Iowa State classes have gotten so big that I believe now they have graduations at Jack Trice Stadium. They can't even fit in Hilton anymore. Then we get to Hilton Coliseum, so that's obviously named after James Hilton. It's not sponsored by Hilton Hotels. And that was built in 1971, and that cost a little bit more, $8 million. And I believe they can seat almost 15,000 in there. Stevens Auditorium, like we mentioned, in 1969, that was the first one to get complete. So that kind of started the center off, and that cost almost $5 million, and they can fit almost 3,000 people in there. And we also have its little brother to the north, Fisher Theater, which was built in 1975 for just under $1 million. And that only seats about 450 people. I don't know if I've ever been in Fisher Theater.
See, I've been to that one a number of times because that's where they have student plays.
Mm. Just because of the smaller numbers in there. Yeah,
really, really good performances by students.
And the last one I was forgetting was the Sheeman Building, which they held, you know, a lot of conferences and weddings and events and stuff like that there, and also houses the Brunier Art Museum. And that was in 1975. That was completed for $5 million. And I should say, for the Stevens Building, I forgot to mention, that was awarded. It was the Building of the Century Award. Back in 2004, it was given that title. So a great honor for that. And it's, you know, it's certainly a building with a skyline that sticks out in Ames. Mm-hmm. It's one you really notice and can see that as you go by there.
So not necessarily the stadium, but the others, you know, that kind of form a collection up at the north end of that area. They seem to have a similar style of architecture. Do you know anything about the architecture of them?
I do not. If they were all designed by the same person, they're all mostly concrete-based, like formed concrete. So I'd imagine they're all going on at the same time, and a lot of them are being constructed at the same time.
Simultaneously
at the same time, too. Yeah. So I would have to look into that more.
I once heard that kind of architecture described as brutalism.
Brutalism?
And that's an actual architectural school, and I think it's the style that those buildings are.
Like playing in with the using concrete and things that are not as what we call like nice finishing touches that you'd see in a normal place.
The walls even inside are rough and so on.
Yeah,
and
wallpaper.
And it's actually a type of architecture. So I'm not sure about that, but that's my relatively uninformed hunch.
We'll go
We can look that up.
Yeah, we'll have to.
Right. Okay, so this is interesting. Do they still have problems with flooding in that area?
You know, I think they've done a lot. You know, obviously, Hilton Coliseum is probably the building that's had the most damage done to it because it is, I believe it's a little sunken in the ground. It's not totally like Iowa City's basketball, Carver Hawkeye, which is totally like buried in the ground. But I think they've done a lot more on with the floodgates and things like that. I know the 2010 flood just hit so fast and unexpected that they thought they had more time to get things like that in. So I think they've taken a lot more steps to make sure that they are more prepared and can get ahead of it. And I think this is on YouTube somewhere. I've seen videos of it when it happened, but if you've look for a video from 2010 of Hilton Coliseum and you'll see the basketball floor floating in, I don't know, 5-6 feet of water or something like that. And they just look like tectonic plates kind of on top
of
that.
Pieces.
Yeah. Some of it's together, but there's clearly it's like gaps and you just see the waves of it go through. Search that out if you've never seen that before.
All right. Good tip. So, Alex, before you leave, you know it's our fun drive now, so I just wanted to ask you a quick question.
Sure.
What does the Historical Society value about KHOI?
I think KHOI is great because it's local. Like, you can tune into IPR and NPR. Those are wonderful, and you're going to get some great news about Iowa and maybe some good news about central Iowa and Ames because we are close to Des Moines, but there's nobody talking about local Ames politics, local Ames events, having local Ames people on the radio. You know, ever since we've lost WI radio back in the 90s, we lost that voice. And I think having KHOI come back to the air has brought that voice back. And it gives people a platform and a place to express themselves artistically with music and control and setting up shows, but also the whole community aspect of it. It is. I mean, it's community radio, and that's really hits at the heart of it.
All right. There you have it, an historical perspective on why you should become a member and donate to KHOI. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you. And I'll say the date for that lecture again. It's April 24th. That's next Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Ames Public Library Auditorium. And you can also check out our current exhibit, Exploring Unique Ames, photo selections from the Farwell T. Brown Photo Archive. That's on display at 416 Douglas. And we're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, 10 to 4.